This is The Spotlight, where we profile Namibia's biggest movers and shakers, brought to you by Namdeb, mining for good.
Welcome to The Spotlight here on The Business Report. I'm Gary Strubel, and joining me in studio, and it's not often I use the word legend, but the legends do abound, of Steve Galloway. Steve, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Now, Steve, you've got over 40 years' experience in exploration, mining, government, investments, corporate and project finance, banking and strategic management. That's a lot of stuff to pack into four decades. Let's perhaps just start out at the beginning, though. Everyone at some point was a little boy with snot running out of their nose. Well, that's if you wound up being a boy. Tell us about your early childhood.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to be born into a Namibian farming family, Okahanya, the only English-speaking farmers in the district, and spent idyllic 6 years of my life there, then went to boarding school when I was seven, St. George's, and then went to boarding school in Cape Town when I was 10, 11. For the rest, I've been in Namibia my whole life.
And studied in South Africa?
So I studied geology, and I suppose I studied geology so that I could be in the sun. I wasn't really sure why I was doing it, but I enjoyed it. I loved it. Spent 10 years in geology. And then went into government, strangely enough.
So tell us about that then. That's quite a big transition. You would have had a career goal. Everyone at 20 pretends they know what's going on. You pick geology and then you wind up somewhere entirely different.
So I was actually doing mineral economics. I saw geology as a exciting short-term career, but I felt I had to do something else. So I did mineral economics, and I was about to do a master's in mineral economics when independence dawned. And the Namibian government called me and said, we need a mineral economist. I said, well, I'll be one of those soon, but I'm not that yet. And they said, no, we need you now. So I joined the government in 1990. And it was very exciting. I was a geologist. I had some economics background, and I was sort of studying mineral economics. I wasn't qualified, but it was a passion of mine. And it was an exciting time because there was this perception that the foreign companies were ripping off the Namibian resources. So my first job was to go and look at all of the contracts, all of the supply contracts, sales contracts, and shareholders' agreements, because it was mainly foreign companies that owned everything. And that was an interesting exercise. And my second job was really to go around the world and benchmark Namibia as a competitive investment jurisdiction with a focus on mining and oil and gas, ironically. Not that we had any, but we had gas, of course. So I had an incredibly interesting job going around the world wherever I chose to go to see what other countries had done and what the success models were. So, you know, that was better than any master's in mineral economics. It was really a huge privilege to be able to do that.
So let's go back to that now, because that is fascinating. There would have been Namibia's independence was very different to South Africa's, South Africa's transformation into a democracy. Yet the same protagonists are at the table, South Africa packing up their lunchboxes and leaving, and many Namibians, many of whom would have probably identified internationally as being moderately South African of some sort, or, you know, interrelated through marriage and migration and so forth. Yeah. Perhaps just give us a sense of those first couple of years. What was the flavor? Because there would have been a lot of lingering competence left behind, and there would have been a whole wave of new incoming competence, and then there would have been an ideology that sits on top of that. Just give us a sense of those first few years as a young man there.
So I moved in just before independence. They sort of got a team going who would be ready at independence, and I moved in then. I was never political. I certainly didn't support SWAPO or anything. In fact, I served in the South African Army, and that was quite an interesting thing. I mean, we had no choice. We served in the Army. I didn't do it very well or very, very willingly, but I did. And it was an interesting transition because, of course, we were put into the civil service, with real South Africans who'd manned the civil service for years. And they didn't necessarily trust us, nor did the incoming former exiled Swapo people know where we stood. So I was sort of a middleman, if you like. I was English speaking. I wasn't part of the civil service. And I came in at the same time as people like Liaki Hangala, who had been in exile waiting to come in and take over the administration. So it was a very interesting time, people sort of sounding each other out and seeing where they stood. And of course, I look and sound like a South African. So there was a level of distrust that I was a stooge, that I'd been planted there to look after South African interests. And it took a while to get that out of the system. But we had amazing leaders. Liaki was my first civil service boss. He was the permanent secretary. And then we had Toivo Yotoivo, who was straight out of Robben Island. And it was the most incredible person that I'd ever met from the other side, if you like. And then I started meeting other ministers and other senior appointees who'd been in military capacity. And for me, it was the most humbling experience that nobody held any grudges. Everybody just got on with a new task and tried to find the skills they were. And I'll never forget Liaki saying, I've got a PhD in geology, but I don't know very much about geology. You guys need to help us. And that was the spirit of finding who could do what and deploying those people in the right positions, to the extent that I was then sent wherever I needed to go in the world to go and benchmark us for oil and gas, for minerals, and eventually for investment in general in the country, not just in the mining sector. So I had the most amazing opportunities and learning curve.
And of course, that would have given you an enormous platform to walk into the private sector, having been given this almost unprecedented international access. You would have been welcomed into the world, I would imagine, at that time. A lot of people curious about the enormous mineral riches that sit in this country and how that's going to look in the future. So tell us about another transition from government back into the private sector.
Yeah, so I mean, the first thing we did was really profile mining. And we did the Minerals Act immediately after independence. We did the Foreign Investment Act, and then we did the Oil and Gas Act, which seemed ahead of its time, but we did that. And then we went out to promote, because we had a fair sort of cross-section of companies here in the mineral sector. Of course, oil and gas was just starting. But we went out and sort of presented that Namibia was not just captive to the South African companies, because up till then it was the Anglo-Americans, Anglo Golds, De Beers, etc. And it was perceived as being the backyard of South African companies. So we had international mining conferences and we brought everybody. And of course, the mining companies wanted to see that we were real. And so we changed all of the laws. We put up new taxation regime, which we thought was more modern and more competitive. And we benchmarked ourselves against the world. And that sort of brought the attention of the Canadians, the Australians, the Brits, etc. And we had a new wave of private sector coming in here, which was good for us, because the South African mining mindset was more big gold mine type mindset. And we needed more the Australian, Canadian, entrepreneurial, smaller exploration type mindset. And that did very well for us. So we really started getting a lot of private investment. And private sector started trusting the new government quite quickly, because, you know, they did all the right things and they really went out to welcome investors of all nationalities. So things went very well, I think, for the first 10, 15 years. And it was a great experience to see all of the barriers of the past and all of these artificial things that, you know, that we hadn't been happy with in the first place, being Namibians, disappearing. And the South Africans who stayed behind in the civil service very quickly saw that this was a very welcoming environment, and a lot of them did stay.
You, of course, went on to a number of different careers outside of that. So what was the link to get out of building the country and then start getting into this place where you now your mind frame goes into investment mode?
To be frank, I got frustrated, because we went out and we found the best of the best And initially we did it in mining. So we looked at the best mining jurisdictions, best tax rates, etc. Inadvertently, we set up a very competitive oil and gas regime. Not that we knew much about it, but we had some very good advisors at that time. So we set up something that was competitive and stands us in good stead now. But then the founding president said, but it's not oil about, it's not only about minerals, oil and gas. It's about bringing investors into the whole economy. So I went and I set up the investment center, I sort of expanded the investment center. And then we did it all again. And we went to places like Singapore, Malaysia, China, Ireland. Ireland was a very successful FDI destination, and they were very competitive. So we set up a framework in 96, which would really catapult Namibia into the A-League, because we felt that we were still in the starter league. And if we really put ourselves up there with 5-6 years of very solid track record, we could be as competitive as anybody. And the Singaporeans, of course, had a very good story. They had just gone through and proved themselves to be one of the most competitive nations. Botswana, right next door, was doing very well, and Ireland. And we sort of put those three models together and said, let's fast-track Namibia. But by then, government was starting to feel that we could do it ourselves. And it was good that we had some confidence in our own abilities, but we didn't have the depth. And I got frustrated that we weren't moving faster. By then, the private sector that I'd been telling about this jurisdiction came to me and said, listen, we can do more if we set up what they called a merchant bank. So Nedbank came to me and said, we want to set up a merchant bank. And I said, I don't even know what that is. And they said, we'll show you what it is, but we need to move now. I initially said no, and a year later they came to me and they said, now we're moving with UAL and Cyfrits and Nedco Investment Bank consolidated, and we set up Namibia's first investment bank, which we called Nedbank Capital. I didn't know much about banking, but they wanted people with broader project experience, and that certainly I had, and I formed a team quite quickly of 4 or 5 people. And off we went as Namibia's first investment bank, in inverted commas, and did very well. And did a lot of the things that we were struggling to do in government because we didn't have the resources, didn't have the sort of flexibility in government to really move projects. And so we started doing it in the private sector and started arranging the funding for some of Namibia's big projects, big uranium projects, the diamond vessels, etc. And we did very well doing what government wanted to do, but putting finance behind it. And that was another huge learning curve for me. And I did that for 10, 11 years with Nedbank, and then set up RMB and did more of the same.
I mean, that's just to summarize, you've gone from hard sciences, natural sciences, into politics, even though you're still in the natural science space, the political environment would have been very different. And then into a banking sector where, again, you have an entirely different perspective on very much the same industry you've been thinking about.
Absolutely.
Perhaps just share with us that particular journey. How does that shape your thinking of today?
Well, you know, I always say, and I've interviewed so many people over the years coming into banking, into investment banking and onto boards. And I always, and I'm biased obviously, but people with scientific background, some scientific learning, whether it's geology, chemistry, engineering, maths, whatever, seem to have a building block or a platform that adapts very easily to other environments. And you can always add accounting or finance or marketing or whatever. But I found that people with that scientific base just do better in technical fields. And, you know, the investment banking area is very technical. And that's why I said to them, I know nothing about investment banking. And they said, you know enough about projects and you know enough about the Namibian economy to be able to apply the clever guys that we have into those different areas. And that's the crux of it. The crux of being successful in investment banking and in project finance, which is what we started with, is being able to put the right skills together and bring a team approach, because nobody's an expert on an entire project. And it's not as though you're just lending people money based on collateral, which they give you, their house or their car or whatever. You've got to really take a long-term view on the project, and that determines your success or not success. And again, I was probably lucky that I didn't have the expertise, and I had to bring it in, and I had to find those experts who were good at a whole lot of different things. So we formed teams, and we were extremely successful in getting some of Namibia's major projects going.
Now, you retired from banking in 2017. Banks, like governments, can sometimes also be frustrating places. They, you know, there's a high degree of compliance. There's a methodology of thinking that's rigorously applied. And, of course, when you're working with other people's money, there's always a massive responsibility that comes with that. What led to the decision to retire?
Well, I'd always said I was retiring at 60, and I think that's the right time to go. I left Nedbank in frustration because we did extremely well in Nedbank. And as soon as our exposure started hitting the radar screens in Joburg, the big bosses and the sort of risk managers there started saying, aren't we too exposed in Namibia to a few big projects, and wanted to transfer our exposure back to South Africa to bigger balance sheets, etc. By then, we'd syndicated and we'd brought in a number of co-funders, so we'd really laid off the risk, and we never lost a single project in Namibia. We were successful on every project. But it frustrated me that after being extremely successful, we were being reined in by risk managers sitting in Johannesburg.
And, credit. They're always the fun guys.
Yeah. And so I said, look, the reason we've been so successful is because we've been on the ground. We've got local balance sheets involved. We've got all the banks funding through our vehicles. We've got foreign banks funding. We've got pension funds funding. And if we go and take it back to the mothership, it's not going to work. So I left. RMB had been watching us, the team of four or five that I led, and picked us up immediately and said, we want you to do exactly what you did before. And I said, no, I don't want to work for another bank because you're going to do the same as the other one did. And they said, we won't. We've seen that you actually know what's going on in Namibia. So RMB was a total pleasure. And I gave them 5 years. I was 54. I said, I'm giving you 5 years. It ended up at six. And I left very happy and handed over to people who were much more accomplished in traditional financial services and banking than I was. I was a pioneer. I set it up. I put the right people in the right places, but it had become quite a big animal. And quite frankly, it probably was a risk to have me running a big bank, and the guys who took over from me, Conrad, etc., were much more attuned to all of the things that you need to do in financial services and banking. And Conrad, of course, is now the group head of the whole organization. He thanks me sometimes. He curses me sometimes for that.
Steve, naturally, you didn't go off to the farm to go fishing all day, and you remain busy in a number of other interests, and you're a guy who still is treading large footprints in the Namibian economy. Tell us a little bit about how you're keeping yourself busy at the moment, and we'll get on to what happens next.
Yeah, so when I retired, and part of the reason why I said strictly 60 is because we were kicking off a project on our farm. The highway cuts through our farm, and there's an area there that lends itself to a big development. It's taken a lot longer than expected, and the investment environment in Namibia has become a little bit more uncertain. So the wonderful setting that I thought the Namibian government established at independence wasn't built upon. And in the last 10 years, let's say, or 15 maybe even, there's been a lot of uncertainty in what really investors face. And this investment conference that we're at, the mining conference now, has sort of amplified that again. Government, I think, has not focused sufficiently on clarifying the environment. So I was going to go and run and develop a big project on the farm, and hopefully we'll do it now, 7-8 years later. But because I was sort of hot off the press, having been funding a lot of the big projects, initially through Nedbank and then through RMB, companies came to me and said, won't you join our board? And I took on too many. I went on 8 boards, half of them sort of commercial and half of them community, social type boards, Institute of Corporate Governance, etc. So I took on 8 boards. And that's a challenge in itself, to do 8 boards, even as a pensioner, is quite tough. So I've cut right down on that, and I've just stepped down from Gondwana. I was on Gondwana's board for 9 years. I was chairman for 8. I've taken on Rossing. I'm chair of Rossing now. I was chair of the Institute of Corporate Governance for a while, but I'm stepping back and getting young guys, and there are lots of them, very talented, very capable, younger generation, who are starting to take over and run these boards very successfully. So I'm able to stand back and be a general advisor to the Chamber of Mines. Gondwana, of course, is flying, so they really don't need me anymore. Rossing say they still need me for a little while. But my next move will be back to the farm, to a big family project, which hopefully will be a generational project and which will get Okahanya back on the map, because Okahanya is being bypassed at the moment, and my hometown really needs to do better and needs to really establish a destination where people don't just pass Okahanya but come there to come and enjoy the sort of attributes that setting has. You know, it's close to Windhoek now that the highway is through.
Yeah.
And we really do think that Okahanya is going to become a major development and entertainment node. It's a beautiful area and can become quite attractive for people, not just passing by, but staying over and weekends and so on.
Okay.
So that's going to be my focus for the next few years.
So let's perhaps take a broader view. I mean, you've had a storied career and still some exciting prospects in the future. Namibia finds itself almost at an unprecedented environment where it's once again back on the global stage. Oil and gas is all anyone can talk about. The mining sector itself is performing very well, especially gold, uranium. Mm. And we know there's lots more in the ground to find. Yet at the same time, just as it seems that the star is rising from a commercial prospect perspective, there seems to be some thunderclouds on the horizon from a, I would imagine, from a regulatory or legislative environment where we are seeing increasing uncertainty come through in policy, and we're seeing an increasingly dissatisfied electorate. Certainly, you know, the trend analysis shows that the one party state we've effectively been since democracy is on the wane. How do you see the prospects over the next 5 or 6 years, and what do you think is low hanging fruit for Namibia to try and course correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in a watershed position now, and I think the first 100 days of the 8th administration has been good. I think our new president is extremely attentive to the very issues you've raised. I think she and Swapo have got 5 years max to show that we really can take the country to the potential that it has. I think we've been moving sideways for at least 10 years. People have been getting poorer for 10 years. And unemployment, of course, has been rising for 10 years. So I think we've got a unique opportunity to really get our regulations in place and get our competitiveness in place, because we've slipped. There's no question in my mind that we've slipped. The mining industry is what it is. It's extremely competitive in its niches. And, you know, to think that uranium has been mined for 49 years in this country, and it was my first exposure to mining as a student at Rossing 49 years ago. And to think that we've mined uranium at these extremely low grades, very efficiently, mostly profitably, and have sustained our position in the world markets is phenomenal. Government must take a lot of credit that when they moved in 35 years ago, they actually enhanced the position. Despite a lot of the rhetoric around independence, government actually strengthened our investment position and made it stable, predictable, and a good place to do business. I think we've slipped in the last 10 to 15 years, and I think this conference that we're at the moment is going to be a good indicator of the way we're going. NDP 6, which has just been launched, I think is solid. The framework is right. It's going back to basics. But I think some of the economic assumptions on NDP 6 are highly unrealistic. And unless we get foreign investors and local investors completely engaged in some of those targets that have been set, they're not going to be achievable. And I think we're in trouble in 5 years' time unless we really do things differently, as the president keeps saying. But that should not include nationalization. That should not include the government taking a bigger role in any of these key resources. Our oil and gas is fantastic, but it is on a scale that we've never seen before. And if we start imposing ownership, local ownership rules that are unrealistic, we're going to lose these big investors. Mining will simply carry on the way it is. We won't get new investors if we insist that Namibians or that government must own the majority share. And hydrogen, I think, is interesting and exciting, but I think it's completely overblown. I think there'll be a few successful European companies that set up in Namibia because it's a great place to do business and it's got good sun and wind. But I think our major projections on hydrogen are completely overstated. So I'm afraid that unless we really get mining into its sweet spot again, we're not going to achieve the economic projections that we've put in NDP 6.
Steve, thank you for sharing your story. As you look back, and you're not done yet, there's lots to come, but as you look back over these major transitions you've made in your career, what do you look back on and that you're most proud of?
Yeah, look, I'm extremely proud of the fact that my family has been here for 100 years and has contributed for 100 years to the well-being of this country. We've never been political, any of us, but I think we've been as loyal to this country as anybody sitting in a political seat. So it really is that move that my family made 102 years ago from Cape Town to Namibia that has given me the privilege of being able to work with big international companies, big mining companies, big banks, sit on boards of major companies because I was in the right place at the right time. I don't see it as any particular skill that I had, but I think I was there and I was loyal and I was determined to make things work. And for me, that's a good feeling to say that you've actually contributed to some of the key building blocks of the country and can continue to do so. And I think, you know, we must all accept that our government, as much as we sometimes criticize it for indecision and for lack of momentum on certain things, I think they have really accommodated everybody. If you have skill and if you have passion for Namibia, there's a place for you in government, in boards of SOEs, and in the wider sort of advisory community. And I think few people realize how privileged we are to be able to talk to a president, to a minister, and say, you're doing a good job, or could you do this a bit better, please? And to me, that's a huge privilege.
Steve Galloway, geologist, bureaucrat, banker, and now firmly economic leader. We look forward to what's ahead for you. We'll catch up soon, I'm sure. Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you so much, Gary.
That was The Spotlight, where we profile Namibia's biggest movers and shakers, brought to you by NAMDEB, Mining for Good.